5 years, I suppose, and it's like I've known her all my life. That's how close we've gotten. And I'd like to introduce Carol right now. She just got back from the Mediterranean, so.
Hi, everybody. I'm Carol. I'm a grateful alcoholic.
Hi, Carol.
My sobriety date is January 1st, 1985, and I am so grateful for that. And grateful to Club 12, because this was my haven. For that first year, I was here all the time, and the only place that I felt safe. Happy birthday to all the birthday celebrants. And the 60 days, that's such a milestone. I remember my 60 days. I had like a spiritual awakening that day. And also, happy Father's Day to all the fathers and stepdads out there. I'll be calling my dad a little later to wish him happy Father's Day. And I can't tell you what a miracle that is. That's a miracle because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I got here, I wanted to tell you all how horrible he was, how he ruined my life, and I had no intention of forgiving him, let alone making amends to him. And because of this program, we were reunited. But I'll tell you a little bit more about that later on. I was born in England, obviously. I'm the eldest of four children. And, you know, everything seemed to be okay until I was around 7 or 8. When I got into the program, I started looking for the missing link. You know, what was it that set me on this path of alcoholism? And after a few years, I realized I had been an only child for 5 years. And so the world kind of revolved around me. And then my mom had two more children in a year and a half, my brother and then my sister. And then I had another younger sister. So I'm the oldest of four, Aunt Bossy. So, you know, and they really weren't ready for three children. And another thing that happened was I made friends with my best friend, Kim, at like about 7 and a half, 8. And she came from a beautiful home. She had beautiful clothes. And I started comparing. I never noticed anything about our home, you know. But especially, I was so envious of her dad because he was this loving, kind man. He had time for her. He was real affectionate with her, played with her. And I started seeing my home that wasn't like that. And my dad, who, you know, he was a very angry man, controlling, very strict. And, you know, he never showed any of us kids any affection. He was a real hard worker. And he kind of thought that, you know, children should be seen and not heard. And that was my mom's job. And so that's where the discontent started with me, you know, irritable, restless, discontent, and this hurt, sadness started to fester into resentment, and it just got worse as I got older. Fast forward to I'm 17 and a half, and that's when I had my first drink, and, you know, I had always felt like I didn't fit in. Like, I wanted to be part of the group. I wanted to be with the popular girls, and I never was. And so when I had my first drink at a Christmas party, I could not believe it. It did for me what I could not do for myself. It gave me that sense of ease and comfort. I changed. You know, I loved that it uses that phrase in the big book, "We lit up," because I lit up. I was kind of serious, mysterious, and kind of sulky kind of person. But when I had those first few drinks, my God, the whole world changed. My outlook on life changed. And it made me funny. And I really liked that. I wanted to feel like that again. Well, I didn't start drinking a lot to begin with. I was just on special occasions. Birthdays, Christmas, or we go out. But like so many of us, you know, it was just now and again. And then it was every weekend. And then it was during the week. And life started becoming a little more out of control. And I know my family, thought that I had a problem with drinking. I remember my ex-father-in-law telling my husband that he shouldn't let me drink, but I didn't take any notice of that. My mom and dad got divorced when I was 19, and I thought, well, that's great. My dad's out of my life. I never have to face him again, and, you know, my life will be great. I get married when I'm almost 20, and like I said, my drinking is progressing. And just before I came out to the United States, that last year, things started really going downhill. And I remember two car wrecks I had. One was I fell asleep at the wheel driving home, and I plowed my car into a car showroom window. And the sound of shattering glass woke me up. But I thought, oh, maybe nobody's seen me. I speed away, and I'm halfway home, and I realize my lights are off. And so I had just driven all through town and out into the country with the lights off. And I get home, I think maybe I've got away with it. The next day, there was a policeman knocking on my door. But, you know, I didn't ever correlate it with my drinking. You know, these things that happen were just, you know, just things that happen. And then just before I came out to the States in 1980, I'd been out drinking with some friends because I was leaving, and I was driving home late at night, and I fell asleep at the wheel, and I crashed into a cemetery wall, a really high wall. I think I would have been dead for sure, but I was driving this old-fashioned, I don't know if any of you know what an A35 is, but it's an old-fashioned car from years and years ago, and it has a huge steering wheel, and that's what stopped me from going through the windshield, and, you know. But anyhow, still, after all that, the car was like a concertina. It was just smashed up, and all the tires were hanging off of it in rags. And it still didn't occur to me, you know, that I have a problem with my drinking. So I come out to the States with my ex. He comes out on a contract with a load of other English guys. And for those 2 years that we were in Tucson, it was just party all the time. We had too much money. We were all just so excited about being in the States. We were partying every night. It was either, you know, we were either at the bar or a club or a disco, or we were at our house or somebody else's apartment drinking up a storm. And it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun till one night I was sitting on a bar stool and I thought, what if I can't stop? You know, it's like a light on the, what if I can't stop? And it so terrified me, I had to have another drink. And I kept pushing that thought back, you know, but that's when I started trying to control it. And the more I tried to control it, the worse it got. My poor ex, you know, his life with me was not fun. And anybody else who knew me, it was not fun because you had to babysit me. You know, if I went out at night, I didn't know what I was going to do. And so I wouldn't go out on my own. I had enough sense not to go out on my own. I dragged some poor, unsuspecting friend. Well, they weren't unsuspecting after a while, but I call up a friend. Are you going out tonight? And I keep calling until I could find somebody that I could go out with who would babysit me and look after me. And, you know, I would lose my keys. I'd lose my car. I'd run out of gas. One time I came home with a friend, and I thought our apartment was locked and I didn't have a key. And so we just broke the glass door to get in. And my ex was inside and I didn't even know it. So, you know, just so many things, all those things that you know that happen. And I'm really starting to feel bad about myself. And we moved to San Antonio and in 82, and that's when my drinking took on a whole different look, because every few weeks or so, I wouldn't be able to sober up. I would, you know, I just couldn't get myself together to go to work, so I'd take a drink. And if I took a drink early in the morning like that, then I was going to go back to bed. And that would start like a week where I'd just stay in bed and drink and get up, and I'd go out and get liquor, and I would do that every few weeks. It was like, like clockwork. And it came to a head in May of 1984. That's when I first found out about Alcoholics Anonymous. And this was in Oklahoma City. We were there for a few months. And I had been on one of these long benders, and I got up in the morning and I needed a drink, so I climbed out of the window because my ex was working on his car with a bunch of guys outside our apartment. So I climbed out the window and I shuffled around the corner in bare feet to the liquor store that I would go to, and I would go around there and I take out a check, I just sign my name and let them fill it out, because I couldn't fill it out. So I grabbed the bottle and I'm on my way back and I forget to go the other way, and so I run into my ex and all his buddies, and there I am looking like hell, you know, in bare feet, holding my bottle, and he said, "Look at that, would you look at that?" And I quickly scuttled indoors, and he came after me and grabbed my bottle, and I got on my knees and I begged him to let me have my bottle back. I would have done anything to get that bottle. And but he wouldn't let me have it. So I don't remember what happened that night. I just can't remember anything till the next morning when I woke up. And I vaguely had this recollection of him telling me that I needed to call AA. And there was a Yellow Pages, back in the old days, Yellow Pages out on the dining room table. So I called the number, and they put me in touch with this lady who was having a meeting in her home that afternoon. And so I go to this meeting, and there are 12 women there. And they each go around, and they're all dressed beautifully, or less. You know, that's how it looked to me. And they had on makeup, but the main thing, they were smiling and happy and laughing. I couldn't figure it out. You know, I thought, my idea of AA, which you were sitting around just a bunch of miserable people talking about their drinking. So they each shared a bit of their story, and I identified with each one of them, and they were so kind and lovely. And I wanted to stay sober. I wanted to stay sober, and I stayed sober for 3 weeks, and until we had to move again. And as soon as I got there, I walked into the liquor store and bought a bottle. And so for that 7 months, the next 7 months, I was in and out. I would get a week of sobriety, and I drink. I get a couple weeks of sobriety, and I drink. I had a van. I was driving a van. I still have a van, but it's a different one. I would drive my van home after a meeting, and I'd feel good. And it would, for some unknown reason, pull into Payless liquor store, or Ben and whatever. And I could not keep it going, but y'all told me to keep coming back. And I'm so grateful for that, because I had to keep coming back, and nothing could keep me away. I knew the answer was here. And I loved everything about AA. I just couldn't stop drinking. But, you know, I had this thing where I would creep in after the meeting had started, and I would creep out before it finished. And so, you know, I wasn't giving it my all. And my big deal that really made me realize I didn't want to do this anymore was the end of that year. My ex and I were going up to visit his relatives in Michigan. And I'd been sober for 5 weeks. That's the longest I'd stayed sober. But I was a bit concerned. I thought, well, I'd better take some liquor with me just in case I get really squirrely up there. So we're at the airport, and I have this tote bag that has a bottle of rum in it. And I just set it down, and it made that clink, you know, like only a bottle of booze can make. And my ex just looked at me and shook his head. Didn't say a word, though. But I need not a worry, because when I get up there, they have liquor, tons of liquor, all kinds of liquor, liqueurs, champagne, every liquor there is, beer. I didn't drink beer, but... And they put us down in the basement with all the liquor. So I could go down there anytime I wanted and drink. But something had changed, because I couldn't get drunk. I couldn't escape. You know, there was nothing. I just felt like nothingness all the time. I couldn't sleep. It didn't matter what I drank. I could not escape. And so we come back to San Antonio, and it's like 2 days before New Year's. I can't remember what happened those 2 days. but on New Year's Eve, I'm home by myself. It's New Year's Eve. Okay. I'm going to have a few drinks, and then I'll go back to AA tomorrow. So I have a few drinks. I'm not really drunk, but I'm pouring out the last of my bottle of liquor. And I just felt like God tapped me on the shoulder and said, Carol, you don't have to do this anymore. I didn't hear an audible voice, but I heard it inside. And so I go to bed. I get up the next morning. I plan to come to Club 12, and I didn't really think about that again. But when I had 2 weeks of sobriety, I suddenly realized I've been sober for 2 weeks. And I hadn't thought about drinking. It hadn't crossed my mind. I've been so happy going to meetings. It hadn't crossed my mind. And then I remembered that that New Year's Eve when God tapped me on the shoulder. It's like, oh, my God, it's true. It's true. You know, God, it's going to keep me sober. And so I really threw myself into the program. And another miracle that happened early on, it's 60 days. That's why every time I hear somebody has 60 days, I kind of, you know, get choked up about it, because I'd been to a meeting, I went home, and I started getting squirrely. And I looked at the clock, and it was 10 till 9. I thought, well, I could just get to the liquor store. This was the first time I'd thought about drinking in that 2 months. I thought, I could just get to the liquor store. And I remembered that saying in the big book that there'll come a time when no human power can keep me from that drink. Only God can do that. So I got to my knees. I said, oh, God, please don't let me drink. Please don't let me drink. Please don't let me drink. When I opened my eyes, it was 10 past 9, and it was too late to go to the liquor store. It had just gone like that. So, and my first sponsor was Mae Walsley, and she was a wonderful sponsor. Tough lady, but she was just so sweet. Until I had 8 months of sobriety, and my husband, who's sitting in the front row, came up and started talking to me. May shooed him away, but that didn't work. And we kind of met under suspicious circumstances, and I don't have the time to tell you the whole story here. Suffice it to say that May was furious with me, and we were voted couple most likely to fail, which is not surprising. I was still married. And but in August, we will celebrate 33 years. And that is, he will say the same thing. That is truly by the grace of God and because of this program, because you all taught me commitment. I had no idea what commitment was, you know, and there are times in every marriage when quit looks good. But you just got to stick it out. You just keep on going, and this too shall pass, just like everything else. So I'm very grateful, for that. I was sort of, it took me a long time to become honest, and it took a long time for me to be able to see my part in, you know, in my past. I mean, I saw all the bad things I did, but, you know, like I'd said about my dad. Well, I had about 2 years of sobriety, and in the meeting I heard someone talking about amends, and the light went on. Oh, my God. My dad, my ex, all my broken relationships. The problem was me. I was the one common denominator. The problem had to be me. And so we were planning to go to England to visit my folks, my mom and my stepdad, and I knew I had to go see my dad. I had forgiven him. It took me a long time, probably, you know, almost that first year to really forgive him. And so I forgave him. I thought that was all I needed to do, but I knew I needed to go and make amends to him. So when we went home, I got a message to him, and I went to see him. Greg dropped me off, and as I was walking up the path to his house, I really got scared. And I would have run away, but Greg had sped away in the car, so I had to keep on. And when my dad opened the door, he looked so scary to me. My dad's not very tall, but he looked big. And I just said, hello, Dad. He said, hello, and he's real stern. I said, I wanted to come and talk to you for a long time. So he asked me in. I started making my amends. And he just melted in front of me. He became a different person. He said, Carol, I'm sorry too. I did a lot of things wrong. And my dad never, ever said he did anything wrong, you know. And we sat and talked for a while. And Then he took me to show me a house he was building, because he was a builder. And when I left him that night, I kissed him on the cheek, and I said, well, bye, Dad. I'll see you when we come to England next time, when we come to visit. And that's all I thought it would be. I had made my amends. When I got back, I thought, well, I need to write him a little note. And so I wrote him a note, and then he wrote back, and so we went to see him the second time we went, and I visited with my dad every time since. But a miracle happened along the way, and that was my feelings toward my dad changed. My feelings toward my past changed. I began to remember things that he had done for me when he had been kind to me. And I realized that I had this whole perception. Now, some of it was true. You know, how my dad was, this true. He was very strict and angry and controlling. But I never gave him any, you know, I never saw that he was a product of a house that was dysfunctional. He was one of 10 children, very poor. And anyhow, my memory started changing. My love for him started growing. And I started enjoying being around him when we go see him. And it was my 40th birthday. I've been sober 8 years then. And he called me on my birthday, and he always called me on my birthday. But when I said goodbye, I plucked up the courage to say, I love you. I said, I love you, Dad. And there was a long silence. And he said, and I love you too. And now every time we talk on the phone, or when I say goodbye to him, he tells me he loves me. And that is such a miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, because today I can send my dad a Father's Day card and really mean those mushy words. For many years, it was hard picking out a card because it didn't match. But the way I see him today is he's just this wonderful man who I love and love to be around and really respect. And I just wanted to touch on another amends because, after this awakening I'd had about, I was the one common denominator, I really felt a lot of remorse and regret about how I treated my ex-husband, because he had taken care of me. And the ugly truth is that I stayed with him because he took care of me. I would have left long ago if I was okay to take care of myself, but I couldn't. I was a drunk. And so I had made amends to him, and then I called him again and wanted to make amends to him, and I kept wanting to make amends to him. And so we ended up in counseling, one counseling session, and our assistant pastor told me two things had changed me. He said, Carol, you were a different person back then. You wouldn't behave the way you did back then. The other thing is that I remember all the time is that God deals with us where we are. And I was able to let that go. I was still very, very sad for what had happened, but I didn't have that awful remorse and guilt I'd had because I hadn't worked a proper fourth step on it. I'd always kept in touch with his family. They still loved me. They wanted to see me when we went to England to visit. And he had a wonderful family. And in 2006, I got a call to say that he was in a coma. He'd been in a coma for 3 weeks after an operation. He just didn't wake up. And he passed away. And his family didn't know what to do about funeral arrangements. I mean, things are different here. They had to fly over here and, have the funeral and then the cremation. And so Greg and I were able to help them with that. And we went up to Waco for the funeral. And after the funeral, we all went to coffee with my ex-mother-in-law, brother-in-law, his wife, and my ex-sister-in-law. And we sat in Starbucks, and we talked about Peter, and we talked about a lot of things. And we laughed, and we cried. And when Greg and I were driving home, I had this, this another like awakening. I thought, oh my God, that's the amends. I was able to make amends. I never thought that that would happen, And so it just goes to show that we don't know when we make amends or, things that happen in our life we can't make quite right. We don't know what God's plan is. We don't know the end of our story. But when we went home that day, we just were both so grateful that we could make amends like that, And so I am so grateful for this program. I can't tell you how grateful I am. When I came in here, or before I came in here, always expected my life to be perfect. I thought if I could just get my ducks in a row, if I could just get this, if I could just have this, then I'd be happy. And May taught me that, you know, we're not promised a rose garden. And that, thank God, that, you know, we have something to get us through these difficult times. And life is not easy. There are plenty of times, you know, that life is very, very difficult. Just because we're sober, it doesn't mean that we don't have difficult times. And I don't know what I would do without all of you guys. And especially my friends in Freedom Group. I mean, they have been so loving and kind to me. And, you know, I'm so grateful to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. Where else could we go? You know, where you just walk into a room and you feel like you belong. You sit down and talk to a stranger and they're not a stranger. You can go all over the world and find an AA meeting and walk into the room and feel like you belong. You know, we all have these different things that we go through, but we can stay sober and have a really good life if we stick close to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I just want to thank you all for my sobriety. And again, happy Father's Day.
Thanks, Carol. Thank you again, Michelle. Shall we all close and the way we look?